You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocals of Cryptopsy, and you're listening to my podcast, Vox and Hops, brought to you by Sound Talent Media, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. I hope you guys have been having a great week. I have been having an excellent time. Last night was the first time in a very long time that I didn't host a Thirsty Thursday virtual hang, and I gotta tell you that I felt strange and weird. Thirsty Thursdays are not finished. They are just going to become something different. It is going to become a monthly hang where I host a live interview with one of the Vox and Hops alumni who are some of the previous guests that have been on the podcast. I'm super stoked about this. The first live interview, Thirsty Thursday virtual hang, will be happening on October 1st, and my guest shall be Danny Marino, who was the very first Vox and Hops guest ever of The Agonist. I am super stoked about this, and you should be too. This starts at 8 p.m. Send me a message via social media if you would like the link. This is a private event, but if you are cool and worthy, I shall invite you. On today's episode, I am with Chris Dodge, who writes a column for Decibel Magazine called No Corporate Beer. He's also in a very cool craft beer-themed band called Trappist. Here it is. This is Vox and Hops, episode number 182.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I am with Chris Dodge of Trappist. He also has the podcast Hour of the Barbarian. He has the No Corporate Beer column in Decibel. How are you doing, Chris? It's great to finally catch up with you.
Yeah, well, very good. Cheers. Let me show you the...
That looks good.
Show you the chalice right there.
What you got in that? What are you tasting right there?
This is from Brewery West. They're in San Pedro, which is near Long Beach, which is in the greater LA area. They've been around for... Oh. Let me get the label very there. Cool. Yeah, but it's an IPA. Because I'm from California, I drink IPAs. It's a West Coast IPA. It's got Citra, Mosaic, Centennial hops. It's pretty straightforward. Pretty awesome. Pretty much your traditional West Coast style. A little bit skunky.
Perfect. That hop bite.
Which I'm into.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you're not into the whole haze craze.
I'm okay with it. I'm not an anti-hazer or anything by any means. I like them, but I think the craze that bothers me is the whole milkshake, like the milkshake IPA thing. Like it's okay, like as a taster I'm all right with. I want to try it, but I can't commit to like a 16 ounce of something like that. And there's been times when, you know, because I always try and support all local breweries, and especially now, you know, in these times when they're all struggling, and so I go out and I just buy a little of everything from everybody locally. Although there have been a few times where I get something home and I look at it, I'm like, blueberry milkshake IPA? Fuck. Like, I have to drink this whole thing? Damn it.
So you're definitely not on team lactose.
Yeah. I'm okay with it. I prefer my lactose in a stout as opposed to an IPA, but, you know.
Just, I have to give a huge shout out to a Vox and Hops Thirsty Thursday gang member, Dan Dalajnikar. I hope I'm pronouncing your name properly, Dan. He is actually the person that told me that I should hook up with you. He was like,
I can't
believe you haven't had him on the podcast yet. So shout out to Dan. And
nice.
Also a shout out to another Vox and Hops Thirsty Thursday gang member, Jorge Villanueva, actually hooked me up with this brew that I'm about to drink, which I've never had before, so I'm going to crack it. And
nice.
As I'm cracking, I'm going to ask you a question. I'll pour it out, and then we'll cheers together.
Okay.
All right. Let's just start very simple. Take me on your... Do you remember your first beer, Chris?
First good beer or first beer?
First beer. We'll make our way gradually to the good stuff.
To the good stuff. Okay. First beer, I want to say, was probably a Coors. No, it was an Oli. It's an Olympia. When I was maybe about 13, and it was when my mom got married to my stepdad. So it was her second marriage, and they got married. My stepdad was a firefighter, and all the firemen all liked their Oli, and so they got married just at this little rec center, and we were hanging out, and all the firemen were like, hey, yeah, come on, Chris, have one of these, have your Oli, and like, okay, cool, like, they wanted me to drink. I'm like, okay, it's cool, and I wanted to drink, and I thought it would be cool, but I couldn't even finish it. As cool as I thought it was, once I tasted how horrible it was, I just kind of like, oh, maybe I'm supposed to like this, so I kept choking it down, and I'd be surprised if I made it even halfway through. I just left it on a table and walked away. So, yeah.
So you know, beer is an acquired taste, especially when you're young.
Especially, yeah, when you're young and when the beer itself is terrible. So,
I hope it was cold at least.
Yeah.
So this is the beer I have over here on my side is a Bellwoods Brewery from Toronto. This is their Donkey Venom. It's a barrel-aged dark sour ale. I'm very excited to try this. The Donkey Venom is a rich dark ale with bright levels of acidity. Clocks in at a 8.5%. Perfect for a chat with Chris Dodge. So let's do a cheers and see how this goes.
Very good. Cheers.
That's so cool. It's definitely got that astringent, acidy bite, complex barrel sour. Love it. Love it. Thank you, Jorge. Thank you so much. Take me to that craft beer journey. How did you make your way from leaving that Oli on the table to being a craft beer, you know, almost you're like a master at level at this point. So it was a long journey, I'm sure. So, but I want to hear this journey.
Well, it was just like a big jump from not drinking anything at all to getting turned on to craft beer. And that was all because of Dave Witte.
Really? Shout out.
All Dave Witte. Shout out to
Absolutely.
Dave Witte.
Absolutely. Box it up.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was friends with Dave since, I don't know, whenever, early 90s, I think. And so whenever, you know, he was on tour, I'd see him on the West Coast, or, you know, vice versa, I'd see him on the East Coast. I'd go out there. But I didn't really, actually kind of going back to that Oli that was left on the table. I was actually a late bloomer when it came to drinking at all. You know, I wasn't your typical, you know, teenager who like was totally like determined to party no matter what. I was actually pretty picky. And so we all the beer and wine and whatever that I had up to that point was also terrible that I was just like, nah, that's all right. Yeah, I'll pass. So I really didn't drink, you know, it was like occasionally I had some shitty like wine coolers or something with friends of mine, or I'd have something here and there, which I'd just take a sip of, but I just wasn't a big drinker. And it wasn't until probably my 30s that I started drinking regularly. And I chalk that up to, I hadn't had anything good up until that point, you know? And actually the gateway beer for me was it was when I was hanging out with Dave. He was on tour with Melt Banana, so it was like probably 2001, 2002, something like that. And I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I moved down here to LA in 2001. It was soon after I moved down here, and so Melt Banana was on tour. They're coming down the coast, and you know, I'd always known that Dave was a beer guy, and you know, it was just one of those things. And they'd come down the West Coast. They were in Portland a couple days before, and he was telling me about, like, he was geeking out on all this like really cool stuff that he'd gotten, and I didn't really have a frame of reference to it. I'm like, that's cool. And he had like a growler. It's the first time I ever seen a growler, and he had a growler that he'd gotten from Hair of the Dog in Portland. And I can't remember specifically what beer was, but he was going on and on about like how special it was. He's just like, I got to share this with you. This is so awesome. And I was like, thank you. I really appreciate it, but I don't want you to waste it on me. Like, if it's that good, I don't want you to waste it on me, because I'm not really into beer. I really appreciate the thought, but I'm fine. He's just like, he was insistent. He's like, no, we're all trying this. So all of us who were sitting in this room, he poured us all a taster of it, and that was like the gateway right there. Yeah, yeah, it's true. And we're like, oh shit, like this is really good. Like I would drink this, Like, who knew? Who knew there's beer out in the world that you would actually want to drink?
So. What style was it? What's...
I want to say it was probably something like a strong ale or something along those lines. Probably something more, you know, I would guess like a gateway beer would probably be more sweet, something more kind of, you know, more like caramely.
Belgian.
Something
Belgian,
like that.
So, Dave yeah. is really into the whole Belgian style, so.
Yeah, so it was most likely something like that. I'm sure it wasn't very bitter, so, you know.
Very cool, very cool. And then how quickly did it become just an obsession from that hand of God beer?
Well, yeah. But it was, and then in the following years, just every time he'd come to town, because I didn't know anybody who was into good beer or knew anything about it, so I was just kind of, for me, it was just like shot in the dark at that point, and I'd just go to bigger stores, like here there's a chain called Bevmo, which is, you know, like liquor supermarket sort of place, and you know they carried craft beers and they'd carry like the early sort of, you know, like Green Flash and Stone and whatever, just kind of the basics, or what are now considered the basics, Alesmith, stuff like that. But so I would just kind of randomly pick up stuff from there and pick up Belgian beers and just pick up whatever and try it. And whenever Dave would come to town, he's usually, because he was touring more and more often once he joined Municipal Waste, so he'd come through town a couple times a year, and every time he came to town, made a point of, okay, I'm going to buy a whole bunch of beer and we're going to get together. And he always had a bunch of stuff in their bus, and so he just gradually started kind of figuring out and learning, but it's mostly from Dave. You'd definitely give him credit for
that's
it.
That's crazy. That's yeah. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. And it took a long time because, I mean, obviously there was internet, but there wasn't as many, you know, as the years go by, there's more and more resources. And at that time, it still wasn't like craft beer wasn't a thing. It wasn't like the super like geekdom sort of, you know, sort of thing like it became in this past decade. So
it's like the early days of tape trading metal back then.
Yeah,
I had this
yeah.
beer, dude. You have to try. You,
yeah, yeah. That's totally
the
true.
The only way to get it is to go there.
Yeah, it's true. And I was. It's funny because that really is kind of parallel to my, I mean, my musical upbringing too. Because I, you know, I'm not really a metal guy per se. I grew up in like more of like a punk hardcore scene sort of thing, but it was still that tape trading circuit of the 80s, and it was a lot of just that's how you find out about bands is you're trading demos and live shows and practice tapes and stuff like that. Everyone, you mail your lists to each other, so and cool. go through, and then you just fill up a couple tapes and send them back and forth. And yeah, I mean, it's the same thing, and obviously there's crossover with you know, the punk hardcore bands and the metal bands, and you know, and then eventually music became crossover, you know. But yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, the earlier kind of extreme metal bands, like, you know, the basics, like you know, Slayer and Exodus and Venom and things like that. Like, I liked it because it was fast and it wasn't as like cock rock as, you know, what I, a lot of people, you know, interpreted as being metal. So
yeah, it's a journey, right? We had to go through hair metal to get somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What about when you were young? What would have been like the soundtrack of your youth? What music did your parents or guardians listen to when you were not in control of the radio?
Mostly because I grew up in the 70s. And so, it was a lot of just AM radio. And just like classic hits of the 70s, which I still totally love, like all the, you know, Eagles and Fleetwood Mac and you know, Steely Dan and just, you know, disco, Elton John, just what was on, what was top 40 at the time. You know, I grew up listening to a lot of that. And then actually the game changer for me was, I don't know. Do you know who Paul Lynde is?
I do not, sadly, no.
He was kind of a comedian from the 60s and 70s, and he was on this early game show called Hollywood Squares. He was the center square, and he was always like the witty, you know, flamboyant guy who had like those like witty one-liners to, you know, snappy answers to everyone's questions. But he had this Halloween special on, and it was 1976. It was a Paul Lynde Halloween special, and he was on there with all these characters from these Sid and Marty Krofft children's shows. So there's Witchy Poo, who's this witch, and all these other creatures and stuff. And so it was this, you know, just dumb, like, kids' Halloween special. But the musical guest was Kiss.
Awesome.
And for me, that was like, whoa. Like, that was mind-blowing, you know, my 7-year-old brain to see Kiss on TV. Like, immediately, I was like, yeah, Kiss. This is the shit. And I remember my parents taking me to a record store, and my mom saying, okay, Chris, you can get any record that you want. You can pick anyone you want, and we'll buy it for you. I'm like, cool. So I go over to the Kiss section. I'm going through. I'm not familiar with them at all. I'm 7. And so I'm looking at all the covers, and I'm just like, whoa. Looking at Kiss Alive. There's just like fire in the background. I'm like, wow, this is so cool. And my mom came over, and she saw me look at him. She's like, ew, Kiss? You like Kiss? And I'm 7, so like immediately I'm shamed, and I just embarrassed. I looked up at her, I'm like, no. And I put it back, and I bought a Guns N' Roses album instead.
Oh, no. So,
but soon after that, I got up the courage, and, you know, very soon I got my first Kiss album. And, I was way into Kiss for years. And then from there, kind of got into, like, hard rock bands, like AC/DC and Van Halen and stuff like that.
Well, we had to go through Kiss, too. And who knows where the metal scene would be without them being innovators, inspiring so many theatrics on stage.
Oh, yeah. Look at all the metal bands now wearing makeup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all Kiss.
<you know? laughs> take me to Trappist. What came first? Having a beer-themed column somewhere, or writing about beer, or playing in a beer-themed band?
The beer writing came later. I think I only started writing about beer because Albert had hit me up, and he'd asked me if I wanted to start doing reviews. And and then when Adam quit doing the column, he asked me if I wanted to take over the column, and I'm like, oh, totally, sure. It's big shoes to fill. But like you, in the days when all of us were touring, every city I go to, every country, that's immediately what you're researching in advance. And when you get there, it's like you just want to try everything and meet as many people as you can and learn as much as you can about the culture. And I mean, you know, I love beer, but for me, the most rewarding part is meeting everybody. And it's just, there's just a social aspect to brew culture that's what makes it cool. And that's what I think is really the parallel to underground music, is that, you know, most of the brewers I know, I mean, there's a few guys who are assholes, but most of them are really cool and they support each other. And they're very, you know, much like, you know, I compare, you have these collaboration brews, which to me is the same as like a band doing a split record, you know? It's the same deal. It's like, hey, I like what you do. You're fans of ours. Let's do something together. And there's very much that camaraderie. You know, I think I went off base from what you asked me.
That's perfect. No, that's perfect. You brought up a very good point that I totally agree upon, hence the metal and craft beer theme podcast. But I think you hit the nail right in the head that craft beer and beer in general brings people together and encourages conversation. Because I am very introverted, and I was for a very long time, except when I would go to craft beer bars and I would be everyone's friend. I would just start talking to everyone and everyone would want to talk back to me. And that's when I got my gears turning in my head. So tell me when you were asked to start writing columns, had you written before, or was just...
Yeah, I've written a lot in the past. I used to, kind of in the late 80s and mostly throughout the 90s, I wrote a lot for, I started out writing for Maximum Rock and Roll.
Oh, cool.
And then I wrote for Flipside for a while. I wrote for a bunch of, at that time, I was trying to be kind of a music journalist of sorts. So I was writing for a bunch of, you know, independent publications. And I worked at some other record labels. And so I worked as a publicist. And so by virtue of that, I was talking to a lot of people at publications. So as I was talking to them, I'd be like, oh, hey, you know, I was thinking of, you know, I'd pitch them ideas on like writing, you know, little featurettes and whatnot. So, but I used to write, for Maximum Rock and Roll, I wrote a lot of, just record reviews and did, you know, band interviews and just kind of helped out with the magazine. But I mean, that's really what helped me tie in with a lot of the underground scene. Was like, I was the only guy on the magazine who liked extreme music. So anything cool that came in, they gave to me. Like, oh, Fear of God record? Here you go. Here's, oh, the first AC 7-inch? Oh, this is terrible. Here, you can have it. You know? Like, oh, I Hate God demo cassette? No, this sounds like you. You take this one. So it's like, you know, from the very beginning, it was just like right place at the right time. And so I was already that person who would be that pen pal who'd try and reach out to people and connect and whatever. But this really kind of helped me expand that exponentially just by having access to way more music coming in from around the world that otherwise I wouldn't have heard at the time.
So that's really cool. And then you didn't have to wait for that tape trade. the tapes were coming to you.
It's true. And so everything that was like heavy or noisy or fast or whatever that basically wasn't pop punk or, you know, because that was a climate at the time was like, hardcore was done, you know, anything aggressive wasn't cool. It was all, you know, bands like Fugazi and just like, you know, which, you know, respect Fugazi, but it was all like everyone in the hardcore scene was acting like they had moved on and like, oh, you still listen to fast music? That's so cute. Yeah, it's just like really, really condescending. And like, what? No, I like hardcore. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I like grindcore. I like noisecore. I like, you know, all this stuff.
Take me to when you had that conversation with Albert and you were going to take over Brutal Truth, turn it into No Corporate Beers. Where you mentioned he had big shoes to fill. What steps did you take to make it your own and not just be a continuation?
Yeah, I wasn't really sure where to go. And, you know, Albert just basically gave me free rein. He really didn't give me any parameters. He just said, you know, you'll find your voice eventually. Just do it.
That's awesome.
Just do it. And so, because he knew that I traveled a lot and that was just kind of that beer was my thing, my hobby, my obsession. And I think he just knew that, okay, well, it'll be interesting because you're going to be in Japan and you're going to be in Belgium. You're going to be in the UK. You're going to be, you know, wherever, traveling around the country and in different parts and you'll meet these people and talk about the beer and talk about the scenes and talk about, you know, other people in the music, you know, music biz who are involved in beer and vice versa. And yeah, and he was right. You know, at first I wasn't really sure what I should be focusing on. I think when I first started writing the column, I was trying to cram as much information as possible in there. Whereas I think I learned after a while to kind of back off, and it's like, you know, even though I'm excited about everything and I want to like condense it all and tell everybody about everything at once, it makes it much better reading if you just kind of, okay, just pick like one or two key things to focus on and just have that be like the focus of that month's column, and you can always come back and talk about something else that's really awesome. But yeah, I mean, especially this year has really flipped the script on on stuff to talk about because I'm not traveling anywhere, but there's plenty to write about, you know. There's and just events in the news have given way to things, right? You have all the COVID themed beers, talking about supporting independent breweries because of COVID, with all them, you know, on the especially that first month in March when everything was shutting down, everyone was panicking and like, shit, how are we gonna stay in business, and just that struggle of keeping their businesses alive, and then all the, you know, all the racial tensions and everything that's been going on since the George Floyd incident, and all just focusing on black-owned breweries, you know, another subject that I hadn't really consciously thought about. And then, you know, at that time when, you know, Black Lives Matter was emphasized and they're talking about black-owned businesses, and I looked it up, I'm like, well, you know, I didn't think about it one way or another. I'm like, how many black-owned breweries are there? I'm like, well, shit, there's 60 of them. I had no idea. And that's just in the U.S. I'm like, cool. Yeah, right on.
It is really interesting to watch because artists and musicians always wear their political or social beliefs on their sleeves, and now breweries get the chance to do that too. I think it's really interesting with the yeah. All Together and the Black is Beautiful Now collab that's been going around throughout the breweries.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very interesting that brewers now, because there's no flagship beers, they can just make any beer that they want, and
yeah.
They can support a movement with that. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah. Actually, it's interesting that you say that. I hadn't really thought about that, but the fact that you said there's no flagship beers, which is true. I mean, there's some that are out there, but yeah, it's the craft beer scene has morphed into this thing where you don't want a flagship beer. You have to stay sexy. You have to have like every couple of weeks, you have to have like something new.
You gotta be the new wife. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I never thought about it in those terms, but that's totally true.
I think that, you know, like the Piney, the Elder, there will never be another one like that. Just like there will probably never be another Metallica.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a Heady Chopper.
It's true. Yeah. No, people still want Piney. That one is pretty interesting because it's only in the last year that I've been able to get it with some regularity. And think how long that beer has been around. It's been a long ass time. You know, it's like I don't know for sure, but I want to say at least 20 years. Maybe it's closer to 15, but it's been around a long time, and it's been sought after for so freaking long. And it's weird that in this age of, you know, sexy beers, you know, milk, blueberry milkshake IPAs and stuff like that, that beer that hasn't changed this whole time is still that sought after. So that's pretty cool.
Absolutely, absolutely. To take me to Trappist, I think it's just so cool. I'm slightly disappointed that you thought about it before me, but a beer themed metal band. I want to hear the whole how this came about and how many beers deep you were in the conversation.
Yeah. Well, obviously there's been bands who just write about like beer, but it's all just had like that party angle. It's just like, yeah, you know, case of Bud, party, beer. Bands like Tankard, which I love Tankard. Tankard's a great band. But all their songs are about like partying. And I just thought there's always been a sense of humor to pretty much everything I've ever done. And I just thought, like, wouldn't it be kind of funny to do a beer-themed band, but focus on, like, you know, fine beer. Like, no, we only drink from tulip glasses. And, like, you know, you're espousing the virtues of fine beer and just, like, you know, the craftsmanship behind it and really admiring that and starting to get into brewing terminology instead of just, like, that bro mentality of just, like, party, chug. Just, like, no, we're gonna talk about, you know, extending your pinky, holding your tulip glass, you know, serving it at the proper temperature. You
know? which more craft beer establishments should get behind?
Absolutely. No, I was talking to our drummer is Ryan Harkins, who he's a co-owner of this metal themed burger place called Grillamall.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we've been friends for a while. He moved out here from Cleveland with Matt Chernus, who runs a business with them. And I met him, God, what was it? I don't know, 7 years ago, something like that. But at that time, you know, he was really into craft beer as well. And he was in the, had played in a bunch of punk bands and everything. And my initial thought was just like doing kind of like a one-off project. I'm like, oh, it'd be funny. Like, let's just do like a Discharge sort of band. But all songs about beer and just like, but all lyrics about like good beer, you know, but make it like super crusty and have just like, you know, the usual World War II photos of planes dropping bombs, but like the bombs will be kegs and be fucking stupid. But it was like, let's just get together and we'll just do some just simple D beat songs and then just, you know, record something really quick and down and dirty. And it's just the two of us. And we practiced a few times. And I really wanted to record, but I was like, it's kind of, it'd be easier to record if we had, because I was playing guitar and he was playing drums. And I was like, instead of overdubbing, it'd actually be better if we just had someone else play with us, and then we could just play everything live, and it'd be easier. So my friend Phil Vera, who we played together in Despise You, and he's in Crom. It was in 16 a long time ago. He's been in a bunch of bands. I hit him up, and he was into it. And then when we all, the three of us jammed together, we started writing other songs that were actually, you know, beyond the scope of just like the simple D beat sort of thing. And it all kind of gelled, and we all just had such a good time just fucking around together and coming up with just silly ideas, just beer themed stuff, and just cracking up. And like, no, actually we could write something that's a little more substantial and start writing, you know, kind of have a wider range of songs. And Phil is more of like a metal guy, and you know, his, you know, some of his favorite bands like Iron Maiden and stuff like that. And so he brings that element of just kind of a more metal background into it. And just, it was, I liked the challenge where it kind of rewired my brain as far as how I approach songwriting. And, you know, not like our songs are super complex or anything, but what I'm getting at is that, you know, when the three of us started playing together, I'm like, oh, this is, we can kind of go any direction with this. And there's so many different, you know, different types of there's so many different avenues we can explore. Cause it, you know, on the album, well, the one album, we have a bunch of stuff recorded that isn't out yet, but on the one album that's out, The Ancient Brewing Tactics. I mean, there's songs on there that, there's a couple songs that are just straight up kind of like rock songs. We've got like D beat songs. We got some, you know, shorter, thrashier songs and like sludgy tune and just like stuff that it's just all stuff that we like.
So. That's amazing. And tell me about the reception from the metal community and from the brewing community.
It's been really good. I mean, everyone's been into it. And of course, you know, I mean, from the metal community, you're always going to get haters no matter. No matter what you
just,
do,
just like your mom against Kiss when you were seven.
Yeah, exactly. And that there's someone's always gonna criticize what you're doing. It's like, whatever, whatever. Stay at home on your computer.
They don't come to the shows anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. I'm not writing the record for you. But it's, you know, there's just a lot of like-minded people that came out of the woodwork, and a lot of. Yeah, a lot of the brewers appreciated it, and we got a great reception from the brewers. I mean, not just the fact that it was about craft beer, but the fact that, you know, kind of lyrically, a few things here and there, we'd make references to things that, like, certain people in the brewing community may only know about. You know, things like that. You know, like Himpton and Ninkasi, which is, like, it's not about Ninkasi Brewery. It's about like the actual, there's like an ancient Sumerian script, which is like a ode to the goddess of beer.
Huh. Very
know,
cool.
Which is like written in, you know, probably written in cuneiform on a, you know, a clay pillar somewhere.
Nice. Tell me about who are some of the, apart from Dave Witte, who would be some of the big metal heads that you have ran through, aside from myself, too, that are huge into craft beer?
That's a good question. I don't know, because you go to something like the like the Decibel Metal and Beer Fest, and you run into everybody and everybody's into it, and it's apparent that the communities are very much kind of hand in hand, unless there's someone who just doesn't like to drink, which is respectable. But I mean, I think everybody gets it, if people weren't into it before, I've seen over the years a lot of kind of my contemporaries kind of slowly like come around, and years later be like, oh yeah, fuck yeah, did you get that barrel age, whatever. like really, you're into that, okay, that's cool.
Oh, the smoothies will get everyone into it, don't worry. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, exactly.
Who would be some of the premier metal brewers from around the globe?
Well, I think probably the granddaddies of them all would be Three Floyds, for sure. I mean, that was like they're kind of like the OGs of that crossover, and just like extreme beer when extreme beer actually meant something, The time when Adam put out that, that guide to extreme beers, that book, at that time it was unique, and as we've gotten into nowadays, like there's just so much out there, and there's so much that it's not like a novelty anymore, whereas at that point it was just like, whoa, there's a ghost chili beer, no way, it's like, it's unique. Or the fact that there's a like a 14% barrel aged beer is like, it at that point it was very uncommon. So but I mean, Three Floyds was the first one, as far as I'm concerned, who really focused on, hey, we like all these bands and we like doing this kind of beer, and we're gonna cross over and we're gonna reach out to, whomever. We're gonna reach out to Cannibal Corpse and
Amber Smash Face.
Yeah. Exactly. We're gonna reach out to Pig Destroyer and do beers with them. We're gonna, reach out to everybody. So they're kind of the biggies. Awake Brewing is awesome, and they've collaborated with a lot of bands. I know Cosmic Eye in Lincoln, Nebraska, they've done some music crossover stuff, but it's like, there's so many out there now, which is great. I mean, it's a great time to be into good beer, that's for sure, because you don't have to seek it out, really.
It's definitely a competitive market, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So I encourage them all to just keep going, be creative, but stay true to your roots, and don't try to just jump into the fads right away.
No, seriously. I mean, there's, and actually, that another brewery up in Portland, Wayfinder, was co-owned by Matt Jacobson, who's one of the owners of Relapse. The Wayfinder is phenomenal, and their head brewer up there, Kevin Davey, he's awesome, and he focuses on just traditional styles, just traditional. They've probably done a hazy at some point, but that's not their focus. They're about doing like a clean pils, a clean Helles, or just something that's just like straightforward, like traditional style, but really, really well done.
Good, good. Crispy 2020. That's one good thing that's been happening in 2020. I've been seeing a big return of lagers and crispy beers. Yeah. It's a very, I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm the same way. It's like, you can only drink, what they, actually the guys at Wayfinder were the first ones that I heard this term from, stunt beers.
Yeah.
Which is like, just everything where,
just hop burn
stuff that's just totally ridiculous. Yeah, stunt beers. I've appreciated that in recent years, and I kind of came around too, because I wanted to seek out all the extreme beers as well. I wanted to try the ghost chili one and every barrel age whatever, and I still like that stuff, but I think after pursuing that for so long and then just having like a really fucking good pilsner is like, oh wow, like there's something to be said for this is like, the fact that you can pull this off is this is equally as impressive.
There's a reason why the Czechs have been doing it for hundreds of years.
Yeah. Turns out they knew what they were doing. Huh. What do you know?
Chris, one last question. I'm sure it never happens to you because you're very organized and in control, but if it does ever so happen, what is your hangover cure?
I've never figured one out. I mean, my biggest hangover cure is not to get a hangover, but I actually have kind of a pretty good internal compass as far as drinking. Like I have this feeling most of the time when I know I've hit my limit, and there's just something about my body when I reach this point, and I consciously tell myself, okay, if you have more, you're going to feel really horrible tomorrow. And sometimes I listen to myself and sometimes I don't. I usually do. Or I just drink a shitload of water and then like give myself an hour and then I'll drink some more. But in general, I mean, hangover-wise, I've tried all the different, like, oh, hey, have a greasy breakfast. Have a whatever. Have a can of Coke and two aspirins and... No, none of that has ever been like surefire anything. For me, probably the thing that works the best is to find a way to go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. That's the only way that I've felt better, is that if I wake up feeling totally fucking horrible, I just drink as much water as I can and then I just make myself sleep. And almost always, after I get up from that second round of sleep is when I feel better. Mm-hmm. So.
And prevention is always the best medicine, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or just don't go there in the first place.
But it comes with the territory.
Yeah, it's true. And it's especially when you are out of town, and that's a big problem. Whenever I'm traveling, it's just like, God, there's just so much to take in such a short amount of time. That's when I'm like, I have to try everything. I'm going to kick my own ass if I don't try as much as I possibly can while I'm here and just maximize my time being in this city, you know?
Wonderful, wonderful. Chris, thank you so much for taking the time. Drink some craft beer with me. I really, really appreciate it. Cheers, and looking forward to sharing a brew in real life very, very soon after the apocalypse.
Yes, definitely. I hope that's soon.
Cheers.
All right, cheers. Thank you.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. I love hooking up with fellow metal and craft beer people. It is amazing. And I was blown away and surprised to find out that yet again, Dave Witte's name comes up as the primary influence as to how they stumbled into the world of craft beer. I just can't get over how many people Dave Witte has helped usher into this amazing passion. Massive shout out to Chris Dodge. I love everything that he's doing. You guys should absolutely go check out his column in Decibel called No Corporate Beer. It is amazing, super informative, and funny. I love it. And of course, go check out his band, Trappist. I hope you guys have an excellent weekend. I hope you guys get to relax. I hope you guys get to unwind a little bit. Don't forget that Vox and Hops is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I'll be back next week with two episodes, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.